thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
The Dow.
Here's John Williams.
Now up 47. It was up 19, then 90-something, now 40-something, but it's up, not down, because interest rates, I guess, are going to be steady with maybe some cuts in 2019. This is John. We're at the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3 o'clock, standing in the middle of a cloud right now. You know, it's funny because it's been so cool and rainy that the city of Chicago has been foggy in May and June along the lake. I don't think it's foggy in Naperville or Joliet right now, but if you were in that narrow band about a quarter mile deep along the lake from Evanston to Indiana, it's just foggy. It's weird. And it really, really affects your life if you're in that band of people. And then if you're in Naperville, where I don't think it's foggy, you don't know what we're talking about. It's warmer and it's not foggy. But right now I'm standing on the 18th floor of a building at 303 East Wacker, looking out these beautiful skyline windows, and I just see cloud. And it's been that way lately. I'm telling you what, whoever paid for May, I hope you kept the receipt. We want our money back. We got a break last night for baseball. I strolled over to Wrigley Field with Brenda about, halfway through the game, maybe sixth inning or so. It was 1-1. I thought we were going to go to extra innings. That really was a classic Crosstown Classic last night, wasn't it? I think a lot of us were paying attention to that for all sorts of storylines. Cubs need to start winning. The Sox need to win as many as they lose. And I think a lot of people wanted to see if the Sox, this upstart team this year, are as good as the Cubs need to be. And wouldn't you know it, Schwarber hits a home run on his first pitch. So there you go. Welcome to the North Side, kids. The Cubs live here. Boom. And then it was a 1-1 game because the Cubs kicked it around a little bit. Thank you very much, Javi Baez. And the White Sox had an embarrassing drop in left field that is so White Sox this year. Three guys, each of whom should have caught that ball and could have caught that ball, and all three of them looked at the other, and it dropped right in the middle of them. It was a little league play.
Oh, man, you should have heard me. I was like, high school volleyball, we learned to call it.
I got it.
Exactly.
Or whatever language y'all speaking out there. Actually, let's see. It was Jimenez, he speaks English. It was Anderson, he speaks English. And Lurie Garcia. I'm not sure what Lurie's English is like, but I think he speaks mostly Spanish. But I think somebody could have indicated to the others that I'll go ahead and catch this, y'all. To me, that was the left fielder's ball, but he's a baby. Then it should have been the center fielder's ball. Anderson could have caught it, but he didn't want to run into their knees, so it just dropped right there. And then you go late into the game, and Eloy Jimenez, who, of course, had a chance to do something remarkable in his first at-bat with the bases loaded and did not, then hits an effortless two-run home run, and the White Sox win. So I was watching all of this on the big screen outside of Wrigley Field in that little grassy park they have there. And then they've got the Brick House Tavern and the coffee shop, and they've got this giant screen on the side of the building, and hundreds of people gather there to watch the games. Last night it was an unusual mix because you had Southsiders with their jerseys and you had Cubs fans. And I got to tell you, it was a little testy. There was just an air of contentiousness there that you don't have when you watch the Cubs playing even the Cardinals or the Brewers or the Nationals or somebody else. You know, everybody's got their fanships. But this was, I thought I was, when Brenda and I left in the ninth inning, I thought, this just feels like something's going to bust out here.
See, I was wondering if there were any issues because I didn't see anything happen around me and no one was rude to me. I wasn't rude to anybody else either. But we stopped going to the Crosstown games for a while because everywhere we sat, there was a fight breaking out.
Yeah, this felt like that was going to happen outside the park. And I didn't see it either. But it just, we saw some drunks on either. I don't know whose side, but some people had a little too much to drink. There were just some people that were arguing. When Brenda and I were walking over there was this one guy, and I don't know if he was drunk or nutty or too enthusiastic, but he was just going on this tirade about how he hates the Cubs. I don't even know if he was a White Sox fan. He wasn't dressed with Sox stuff on, but he was just angry at the world, and he was throwing things and kicking them, and we kind of circled around him and then watched it on the big screen. We got home, by the way, and finished the game on TV. Well, we were watching on TV Jason Benetti and Steve Stone. But at the ballpark, they were showing it on the big screen. They were showing Len Kasper and I guess that's Jim DeShays. They were showing this the Cubs broadcast. I could not find the Cubs broadcast on my TV at home. Were you clicking around trying to find it? Because, you know, I talk into that little microphone you have on your Comcast remote control. I said Chicago Cubs. It would put up the White Sox game. I'm thinking, why am I looking at the White Sox announcers on a home Cubs game? But at the ballpark, they were showing the Cubs announcers. And I suppose both the two TV stations in the same market would have their guys doing the game.
But that doesn't normally happen. Didn't WGN TV air it?
We had the Sox.
Yeah, but the Sox were on Channel 9.
Yeah. I thought it was NBC, the Midwest channel, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I thought they did the Cubs broadcast last night. Comcast,
there?
Yes, thank you.
So they had the Cubs announcers doing the game as well. That's pretty unusual, isn't it, that you've got the two broadcast teams doing the game in the same market like that on TV? I didn't think that was what happened.
A lot of money wrapped up in that.
It was really a fun game. I mean, so that was a memorable 3-1 pitcher's duel. It was a nice pitching performance. There were some really good defensive plays despite the stupid plays that were out there. And then a Schwarby home run, first pitch of the game. Cubs don't score again. That's a summary of their season. The stupid play by the Sox was a summary of theirs. And, you know, the Sox can also win games against the Yankees and Cubs. And Jimenez, who is, by the way, they said last night, he's 22 years old. The Cubs picked him up 6 years ago. The Cubs drafted him when he was 16. And he is now, with the White Sox, of course, playing at the age of 22. And his home runs don't even look like he's trying. Boom. A lot of fun.
Yeah, not to mention he broke his bat on it. Imagine if he didn't.
Oh, he broke his bat on what?
Yeah, on that home run.
Oh, I didn't see that. PJ, can you help me out on this? You're on WGN. Hi.
Yeah, the game was last night. The Cubs broadcast was on Comcast. The Sox broadcast was on WGN.
Yeah.
Tonight the Cubs are on Channel 7, and the Sox are on Comcast.
Okay. That has been a pain in the butt for Cubs fans for the last few years. I think it was last year, the year before, probably last year too, the Cubs could have been on any one of five stations, you know? It's kind of hard to find these teams sometimes. I mean, you can, but it's not like you just turn on Channel 9 anymore. And next year, I guess it'll be easy because it'll all be on that, whatever they're calling the Cubs.
Our key broadcast, whatever they call it.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to that, I know. Yeah. Okay. Hey. So, do it again tonight.
Tonight the Cubs broadcasters are on Channel 7, ABC, and the Fox broadcasters will be on Comcast.
Got it. Yeah. Right. Well, we'll fight over the control at my house. Thank you for the help on that, PJ.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Have a good night. The Bleacher Report website, in a story about how Bryce Harper is not earning his $330 million this year. In fact, his stat line is third best on his own team. He's hitting below 250. He's got, about 15 home runs. You know, he slugs okay. But, you know, for $330 million, you ought to lead not only your team, but the league. He is the third best batter on his team, Bryce Harper, is at 330. And we were so hoping to get Bryce Harper. And now I'm kind of glad we're not having Bryce Harper. I may eat those words, but today it's working out okay for us. And then Bleacher Report writes, again, the Phillies aren't sunk. They'd be a wild card entrant if the season ended Tuesday, but if the Phillies want to join the top tier of the senior circuit, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Chicago Cubs, and the Braves, they need Harper to be the man. Presently, FanGraphics projects the Dodgers to win 101 games, the Braves to win 91, the Brewers 86, the Phillies 84, and the Cubs will win 89 games. FanGraphics says at the rate things are going, the Cubs will win 89. Maybe that'll be enough to win their division or maybe get in via the wild card. But you figure the Cardinals will be there too. Three of the best teams in the National League are in our division, and we might not be a wild card team. Or we could win it all. That's where the Cubs are right now. Okay. Line one. Talk to Joe. You're on WGN. Hey, Joe. What's up?
Hi. I'm a longtime Cubs fan who's on the verge of switching to the White Sox after what the Cubs did with this package next year, where there's not going to be a single game on over-the-air TV.
Yeah.
Think about all the fans in their 70s and 80s who are living on fixed income and can't afford cable and don't know enough about computers for streaming. And they've dedicated themselves for 60 or 70 years to watching a losing team. And then as soon as the team gets good, they get the big middle finger. Sorry, you can't watch us anymore. We don't care about you. You don't have enough money. That's basically what the Cubs said to these people who have watched them for decades and decades of losing.
At least you had 2016. Do people watch games over the air right now? Do you know what I'm saying?
I guess this streaming is a big thing now. But
No. I'm not saying streaming. I'm saying if you don't afford, if you can't or choose not to buy a cable package, what can you get TV stations just, you know, over the air with an antenna?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
I was out of work for a couple of years and gave up my cable.
Hey, you're not alone.
There wasn't a whole lot on there that I missed, to be honest. A bunch of non-real reality shows.
But right now, can you watch the Cubs on TV then?
Yes. You don't get as many games, and I'm okay with that, but you get some games.
Right.
Like tonight. Tonight, they're on over-the-air TV. You know, you get the major networks over-the-air, 2, 5, 7, 9, and there's enough to watch with over-the-air, and if you don't want to spend $100 a month, but, that, you know,
100.
Now we're not going to get any Cubs games.
In my dreams, my cable bill's 100 a month. And by the way, if what happens in Chicago next year is what happened in Los Angeles a few years ago, and is the case for Dodgers fans right now, you cannot get Dodger games on the stream. You can't use your device to watch the Dodger games in Los Angeles unless you buy the package from the TV network. So you said...
And the Yankees were the first to do it. The Yankees are the first to have their own network and take their games off of over-the-air TV.
Well, my point is then, in fact, you won't get the games at all next year unless you pay some sort of premium price. You won't get it on your device.
We will still get White Sox games for now.
Yes, until
they get good in a couple of years and do the same damn thing.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, thanks for the phone call.
Take care.
Have a good day. Yeah, I don't like that either. When I get to be king, that won't be the deal. When I get to be king, here's what I know what you want. And I don't know how this is going to work, but I know what you want. You want a la carte. You want $5 a channel, and you want to order your channels. You'll pay $5 for ESPN and $5 for the Golf Channel and $5 for HGTV, and you just want to menu pick your stuff. And they say that can't happen. You need the CNNs and ESPNs to sort of subsidize the other channels, and that's just the way it's got to be. But that's not what folks want. And who knows, with streaming and people cutting the cable, maybe that'll change. But that's where it is right now. A couple of highlights, not from the baseball game last night, but from the president's speech. You know, I don't talk as much about Donald Trump as I used to. I think America is served by that. But I don't have my head in the sand, and I know you don't either. So he made his new campaign pitch last night. A few things he said, a few things he didn't say, a few things he said that were true, a few things he said that were not coming. Somebody just texted and said, so John, let me get this straight. You didn't show up until the middle of the game and you left before it ended. Well, we were listening to and watching it at home, and then we walked over to the park and watched it on the giant screen out front. That's just kind of fun to do if you live in the neighborhood. And then we walked back home and finished the game on TV. I was never inside the park. Catch Living Healthy Chicago this Saturday at 9. Learn about the struggles and successes of everyday Chicagoans with health and fitness. Living Healthy, that's Saturdays at 9 on WGN-TV. You know, with all this rain we're experiencing, rainiest May ever, next 10 days you've got rain pretty much on your little weather icon every day. It's foggy outside right now. They say it's going to be foggy even when it's not rainy because there's just so much moisture. Have you noticed leaks in your windows and doors? Those leaks can cause damage to your walls and home. All that moisture is not good for leaky windows and doors. If you call Next Door and Window, they'll come out and evaluate your situation, show you the problem areas that are most problematic, sometimes ones you can't see. It's the company we had install beautiful, energy-efficient, and waterproof Marvin windows in our home. We're glad we did. Next Door and Window understands that when replacing windows and doors, you want a great fit so it'll look like a perfect match. They stain or paint the inside and outside before they stick them in. They're energy efficient. They make sure that, you know, if there's a water issue or a rotted wood issue inside those walls, they'll fix that too. And right now they're giving you 40% off the installation of windows and doors with 18 months of interest-free financing. Call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR, 1-800-NEXT-DOOR, or go to 1-800-NEXT-DOOR.com. Next Door and Window, thousands of options, one perfect fit. Lots of text about the ball game last night. Where was the seventh inning stretch? Was there a seventh inning stretch last night? Yes, there was. I don't know now if the... I was there when it happened outside the park. I don't know what the radio and TV stations did with that. What radio station can you listen to the Cubs, John? Sadly, the Cubs are not at broadcast on radio this year. John, not only can you watch the Cubs on over-the-air TV, the picture is better. How about that? John, I cut the cord on cable 10 years ago, and I'm not sorry. I get 65 broadcast channels, some of which aren't available through cable. I'm never going back. John, I love the Cubs when they're on a regular network channel. I don't know what I'm going to do when they stop showing them next year. It's really disappointing, and I just can't afford cable. It's unfair that the Cubs have become some kind of luxury brand now. All those decades of waiting and hoping, and now it's getting taken away. The president, while all that was going on, was giving his speech in Florida last night. And, you know, one thing that surprised me a little bit, this is the Associated Press story, and I somewhat agree with it. It said President Donald Trump officially kicked off his reelection campaign Tuesday with a grievance-filled Florida rally that focused more on settling scores than laying out his agenda for the second term. What do you know about Donald Trump? You know that he doesn't like Hillary Clinton, and his fans don't either. You know he doesn't like the media, and his fans will chant CNN sucks. And you know that he thinks that the Mueller investigation was a witch hunt. That's pretty much what he's been saying since before he got elected and through his first couple of years. I guess we shouldn't be surprised that he said that again last night. But as he's setting the template for the next 4 years after the first term, you'd think that he would have something new to say, or that he wouldn't at least still be getting the crowd to chant, "Lock her up." Hillary Clinton is definitely not running this time. And yet it felt very much like the same old, and I just wonder if the Trump supporters or the people that might join them are a little tired of those same tropes over and over again. AP says Trump complained he'd been under assault from the very first day. He complained about the fake news media and the illegal witch hunt. The Democrats, he said, want to destroy you, and they want to destroy our country as we know it. He said things that were positive, his accomplishments, which get fact-checked, and some of them were true and some of them were not. But let's start with cut number four. I've only got a couple for you here, but this is just sort of what it was like last night. This is the president reminding everybody that too much of the news is fake.
You know, I said, this is a very big arena for a Tuesday night. I said, you know, if we have about three or four empty seats, the fake news will say headlines. He didn't fill up the arena, you know.
That works every time. That works every time. The fake news doesn't say that. The news doesn't say that. It just is not a storyline anymore, but it's a stump line. And I guess perception is reality. It works. Speaking of perception, the polls are in. They come out about every day. And they don't say much different these days. They say that Biden would beat most of the Democrats, in fact, all of them, and they say that Biden would beat the president. In fact, a Fox News poll that was taken on Sunday, June 16th, so a Fox News poll on Sunday, said that a Biden-Trump matchup, Biden wins by 10, Sanders wins by 9, Warren wins by 2, Harris beats Trump by 1, and Buttigieg beats him by 1 as well. That's the Fox News poll from Sunday, June 16th. The other polls pretty much mirror that. The president did raise in 24 hours $25 million, though. So you've got mixed signals there, don't you, about his support. It's 1:31. We'll pause, head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. The stories that matter are coming up. Thank you, Eric. Yeah, the Tribune echoed what you just said. Another steady dose of showers and thunderstorms for the next week. National Weather Service says the pattern that brought the rain in May hasn't changed much at all. And that's referring to the wettest May in recorded history. The Times Chicago doesn't have rain. They say we'll still have enough water that we'll have fog. So we got that going for us. There's a 50% chance of rain. This is the Weather Service tonight and tomorrow. 80% chance of rain Friday night. There's a chance of showers starting Saturday, lasting through Tuesday and for the rest of your lives. Thank you for sharing that. Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic at that newspaper, the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Phil.
Hi, John.
You swim over?
Yes, I'm just enjoying the view here. It's not raining right now. Not on me. It was fine.
We're 18 stories up, and we're looking out into a cloud right now.
Mm-hmm.
lots of texts about what we were talking about a little while ago, about the Cubs, and then just some highlights from the president's speech. John, you said that the Cubs aren't on radio. Don't you know that they're on the radio? No, I don't think they are. The Cubs aren't broadcast on the radio this year. It's a shame.
I've looked everywhere.
Because I know. I thought, well, I'd put that on the radio. It's a really good club, and folks like to listen to it on the radio, but they're not broadcast on the radio this year. Just the White Sox are. Welcome back, Phil Vitale. How are you?
I'm good. Did you enjoy that game yesterday?
I did. Brenda did not. And it's for the first time in our lives, I don't think we were enjoying the company of each other watching a baseball game.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, I'm a big Cubs fan, so I was not happy with the ending. But you had to like the drama of that home run. You know,
the first and the second.
Yeah, the ex-Cub kid gets his first chance to play in Wrigley Field, and he jacks one out of there.
Would have been more epic if he'd hit it in his first at bat with the bases loaded.
I thought about that when he came up. I said, here we go.
I know, and then you know he grounds out.
Double play yet.
No less. But then there was also something almost more redeeming still that he wins the game with the
exactly.
home run in his last at bat. So that was fun for the White Sox fans. And then it's something you don't hear that often. I don't know if, Lauren, were you at the ballpark for the game last night?
Oh,
or
man,
did you
not
go home?
Only was I there, but I had some of the best seats in the place.
Where were you?
Front row.
I did not.
My.
Well, so after Jimenez hits that home run, I don't remember hearing this before. Let's go, White Sox. Clap, clap,
right.
clap.
Oh, man, there was some real back and forth going
really
on in the upper
loud.
Area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we heard it outside the park where we were. And, you know, when the Cardinals are in town, when the Yankees are in town, they wear their jerseys, but you don't hear their chant that much.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of weird. I think that was unsettling even for Cubs fans.
I was actually amazed at how many cheers I heard just when, you know, we had some good plays. I felt like 35% of the people there were White Sox fans.
And this is what Cubs do to Milwaukee fans. This is what Cubs
and
fans do
Dodger
to Reds
fans. Yeah.
You know, we go to their parks and it's always like a home game on the road because Cub fans travel and they're so
obnoxious.
they are such good fans. Period.
Yeah.
That's the end
passionate,
of that.
Passionate.
Totally. I mean, that's all I'm saying. But the point is, it's weird to have that come back to Wrigley Field.
Mm-hmm.
That I have not heard.
I haven't heard it in a while. Cardinals fans used to attend the games in larger numbers than I've seen the last couple of years. That may come back. But, I mean, it makes for a great atmosphere, even if all you're doing is yelling, "Tastes great," less filling at each other.
It's kind of what they were doing.
That's fun.
You reviewed Galit, mm-hmm. which is a Middle Eastern kind of Mediterranean restaurant.
Yeah.
It's in Lincoln Park at 2429 North Lincoln. You give this place 3 stars.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. it's too noisy for some.
It's
looking at you.
Yeah, I know. Ben Wood. And by that, he means me.
Yep. So get there, you know, get there, hit the place early before the boisterous people really show up. But this guy won a James Beard Award in 2017 for Rising Star Chef, which goes to a chef who's 30 or younger. And he came to Chicago. He was in New Orleans working at a restaurant called Shaya, which was an Israeli restaurant. And now he's doing similar food up here in Chicago, though he's not trying to place an Israeli label on it because he's just pulling in influences from throughout the Middle East and a little bit beyond. So, and it is almost impossible to say this is an Israeli dish unless you talk about tradition, because the ingredients aren't unique to, you know, that's anything that specific.
Well, in that part of the world, you've got olives and cucumbers and tomatoes and chicken.
Right.
And that sounds Greek and Turkish, and you write Iraqi, Tunisian, mm-hmm. all of that.
Right. Yeah, so it just takes in the whole region.
So then you said the menu is kind of broken down into three different groups. You've got the hummus stuff.
Right. He's got four different types of hummus.
You've got the cold dishes.
Right.
Five small cold dishes.
Right.
So what's that?
They're kind of like little Korean banchan almost. You'll have little bits of collard greens, and I'm looking for my picture that tells me what I've got there. They have some labneh, which is yogurt with hyssop and sumac. You have this thickened tomato pepper jam that's known as esme. He serves some feta cheese with onions.
Would you then eat that with the hot stuff as well? Because then they have the mostly over the coal hot dishes as well.
Well, if you ate them the way they're eaten in that region, they would show up with your hummus and your pita, and then there'd be all these little dishes arrayed around.
Which is the fun way to do it.
And that's typically how people order it there.
Yeah.
You pick your hummus, the pita just shows up, and then you get the salatim, which is the word for salad, but these are all little cold dishes, not greens exactly.
You say that said, the smaller dishes made me the happiest. Don't miss the crunchy falafel.
Yeah, I mean, I started off in my career getting a hold of some bad falafel, and it kind of soured me on the whole thing. It's just overcooked, yucky tasting stuff. And then I found good falafel. I said, oh, okay, this guy's. I mean, given the concept of the restaurant, he has to do falafel, right? He has to do it. So he said, all right, I'm going to make some eye-opening falafel. I'm going to make this really, really, really good, and you're going to like it.
We're talking about Zach Engel's place. It's called Galit, G-A-L-I-T. It's a Middle Eastern masterpiece, says Phil Vitel. 3 stars is excellent at 2429 North Lincoln here in Chicago. And you always talk about the bar, especially if it's got a good cocktail program. You think this one's pretty good. And they serve a couple drinks there that I circled. The Sazerac, which is not an easy drink to make well. And it sounds like they do a nice Sazerac there.
Right. Well, his years in New Orleans should have given him plenty of practice with that drink.
And the Negroni-like Sunset on Halsted. I'm seeing Negronis in different versions of those pop up on menus. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've been there all along, but I'm noticing that more this year.
Well, it's become a more popular drink, and you have so much flexibility in what you do with the bitter element. You've got to have the gin, but with the Amaros, that's a large descriptor for a whole lot of different additives, and each has its own little vegetal or fragrant kind of addition to the herbal presence, and so you can go a lot of different ways with a Negroni.
You also say, by the way, large plates are $16 to $27, so that's not that expensive.
Huh? No.
And it's Conversation Challenged.
Challenged.
And it's 3 stars is this place at 2429 North Lincoln. And again, the name of it is, how do you pronounce it?
Galit.
G-A-L-I-T, like mm-hmm. I've been saying, Galit. Okay, let's pause and come back with let's do this now, and then we'll come back with Phil's Flash Fry.
Mm-hmm.
We have some from last week, and here's your chance to call or text 312-981-7200. If there's a restaurant that you want to tell Phil about or ask about. Some of you want to know, where's a good pizza joint on the south side, or where's a good Asian place northwest? Or, hey, Phil, what do you think of restaurant X, Y, or Z? It's your turn to ask Phil some questions or make some suggestions. The Tribune did is it just the Tribune or the other publications in town doing this? They're doing, okay, we tried every gourmet burger. Mm-hmm. We tried all the good famous ice cream shops. The Tribune has a piece of the 14 different brands of ranch dressing.
Yes.
And ranked them. Walden Farms is number 14.
Out of 14.
This tastes straight up like chemicals mixed with dirty water, one taster wrote. The consistency was watery and thin, and the dressing smelled like paint or a public pool.
We paint a picture with words at our company. That's what we do.
Number 13 is Annie's Naturals.
Yeah.
I literally gagged, one wrote. It smelled like feet or sweat and tasted like bad cheese. Number 12, Sir Kensington's Avocado Oil Ranch. Number 11, O Orchids Ranch Organic Dressing. 10 was Daiya, D-A-I-Y-A, Daiya Homestyle Ranch Dressing, which is gluten, soy, and egg-free, dairy-free, too. I don't know what's in there, then. Another participant wrote that the dressing looked cheap, but it tasted better than expected. Still others said it tastes wrong. After that, though, you get into some that aren't all that bad. Number 9, Newman's Own Ranch Dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Some said it tasted like a factory. Another said it tasted like cheap pickles. But it was 10 and wasn't horrible. Number 8, Organic Ranch Dressing. That's the brand from Whole Foods. One tester said it was pretending it's ranch. It tastes more like Caesar. A lot of them said it's more like a Caesar dressing than a ranch dressing. Number 7, Simply Balanced Organic Ranch Dressing. That's the Target brand. Participants said that it tasted too much like mayonnaise. It was too mayo heavy. Number 6, Wishbone. Number 5, Trader Joe's. Number 4, Ken's Steakhouse Ranch Dressing. Received compliments for its rich flavor, consistency, and appearance. Number 3, Tuscan Garden Ranch Dressing. That's the Aldi brand. How about that?
Yeah.
And then the top two were Kraft Classic Ranch Dressing, and the one we haven't mentioned yet, Happily Is the Best. This
right.
is the one I grew up with.
Mm-hmm. The original.
Hidden Valley. The original ranch is proof that sometimes the original is really the best. They loved it. It goes good with everything, they say. In fact, somebody said, it tastes like ranch and makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Right.
You don't like any of them, do you?
I'm not a ranch guy. To me, ranch dressing is what you put on salad for people who don't like salad.
It is a very flavor-forward dressing.
Right. It's a vegetable masking agent.
Yeah, I hate ranch. I think it tastes like sweat.
It does. Well, it's got kind of an earthen, you know, it's not citrusy. It's not mm-hmm. sweet. It's more peppery and earthy. I mean, when they said it smells like feet, I kind of understand how if you get it wrong, mm-hmm. you could be there.
Well, you're interesting. The ones that didn't like the ranch were the ones that pointed out, you know, if they said it smells like feet, which means it probably smelled a little cheesy to them, but
yeah,
a stronger
right.
cheese
uh-huh.
component. And ditto for the ones who thought one dressing tasted more like Caesar than ranch.
They kind of live in that space.
Right. So that's when you detect a stronger cheese component, that's probably what tips ranch dressing over into the Caesar world.
Okay, let's pause, and we'll run through some questions, suggestions, and comments from our listeners. You can call mm-hmm. or text now, too, 312-981-7200 for Phil's Flash Fry. Remember, at 2:10, we'll visit with Sergeant Brian Kluver. And another officer whose last name I'm not real good on. In fact, I'm not sure I got Brian's name right. But they're Carroll Stream Police Department officers who will tell us how they are going to know when you are too high to drive. Oh, you should hear this at 2:10. Ms. Garris, do you have the theme for Phil's Flash Fry ready? In 3, 2, 1, woof.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chop down.
The number's 312-981-7200. On Wednesdays at this time, Phil takes a potpourri of your stuff. Last week, Phil, you answered a question for somebody, where's a place for North Side Pizza or Northwest Side Pizza? But this texter from 708 says, what's your favorite place for Chicago deep dish pizza, period, and why? Pick one.
I would go with Lou Malnati. I've been a Malnati fan for a long time. My wife and I had our rehearsal dinner at the original Lou Malnati's in Lincolnwood. That's how long I've been eating that pizza. It's one of the originals, one of the original big three that really made deep dish pizza.
What are the other two? Gino's
and of course Uno.
Yeah.
In fact, Rudy Malnati was the original general manager at Pizzeria Uno, and his son Lou broke away from the group and started went out on his own.
If I had my druthers, I would say Gino's.
Uh-huh.
But you can't go wrong with any of
those.
No,
it's like, well, who's got the best religion? It's kind of it's kind of like that kind of question.
Next one. Hey, Phil, who's got the best religion? How do you, what are the chances?
You know, I'm going to go on a limb. No, I'm not going to say
it. Really, that will not serve you well.
I'm going Dutch Reformed. Come at me. I'm doing it right now.
What have you got? Come on, bring it. Hello, can Phil please remind me of the place he recommended a few months ago for outdoor dining in Naperville?
Naperville. I bet I was talking about the rooftop restaurant on the Hotel Arista known as Santo Cielo.
This says it might be Mexican.
It is.
Yeah.
It's from the people that that did A Toda Madre, which is very, and in now it's in
where is it, Phil?
Glen Ellen. They moved. And they opened this place, which is a little more refined Mexican. It's got to be. It's on the rooftop, but it's
what's the name
got
of
glass
place?
Walls. Santo Cielo.
And it's on the rooftop of the hotel in Naperville.
Right. Right downtown.
Eric says what? You're on WGN. Eric, how can we help you? You're on the air with Phil Vitale.
Yeah, hey, Phil.
Hi.
One cuisine I really like a lot is Czechoslovakian, like pierogies and arugi, potato pancakes, and all that type of stuff. It's usually cooked in a lot of butter and pasta and stuff like that.
Okay, hold on, hold on. Your line's a little funny, but I think we got it. Czech food.
Right, Czech, please. He wanted... They're kind of dying out. Honestly, there was that great, what I called the dumpling corridor along Roosevelt Road on the western suburbs. I'm not sure which ones are left. We had Bohemia House in River North, but they eventually closed. It was
really?
run by two Czech doctors. They invested money in it, and they had a very, very good chef there, and it was a terrific restaurant. But they are that's a hard one to find these days.
Okay, if somebody's got a suggestion that you go for those pancakes and buttery foods, Czech food, please. Give me a call, 312-981-7200. 773, who's got the best beef shawarma in town, Phil? I don't even know what beef shawarma is.
Beef shawarma is kind of a pita sandwich. It's more in the lunchy and borderline fast foody kind of thing, and I don't indulge.
You don't like it.
It's not on my radar.
Okay, so thank you for not answering.
Confessing. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Phil.
Oh, Bohemian Crystal in Westmont. I forgot that one.
Bohemian
Crystal in Westmont for your Czech food.
Yeah. So for shawarma, El Bawadi in the west suburbs is really good.
Spell it.
A L B A W A D I.
Oh, that's in the south suburbs, right?
Yeah.
What suburb is it in?
I think it's by Hillside.
Yeah. El Bawadi?
Yes.
El Bawadi.
Yeah. South of Hillside, I want to say...
Bolingbrook.
Nope. Further east of Bolingbrook. Close to Toyota Park.
Spell it one more time, Elif.
El Bawadi. A-L-B-A-W-A-D-I.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll do for that. We're out of time, Phil. You Googling it on your phone?
I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to see if I can find this silly address, because I should know it, but I don't.
You dialing it up?
Yep.
Ridgeview or Bridgeview? Bridgeview. Producer Olive says it's in Bridgeview. She's got two fingers on a keyboard.
She's got it. Yep, 87th Street in Bridgeview.
Yeah. Okay, well, there we go. Well, we knocked a couple of them down.
Wasn't that far off of my Toyota Park guess.
Somebody just wrote in the gauge! They must love the gauge.
Yeah, that's
over by Millennium Park.
Place on Millennium Park. It's kind of a gastropub, but they don't like the name gastropub, so they don't call it a gastropub. But they have a lot of beers there, and they have some interesting pubby kind of foods. They have some game too. I think they used to have a venison burger. I don't know if it's still there, but it was. I liked that one a lot when they had it.
Read Phil Vitale's reviews in the Chicago Tribune, the paper edition, also online. ChicagoTribune.com/dining. Nice to see you, Mr. Vitale.
Thank you.
Thanks
nice
for
to
coming
be seen.
In. Yeah, it's good to be seen here in the cloud that we are
That's
in.
That's right. I'm up in the clouds.
The fog rolls through downtown. We're going to go into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with the stories that matter, and then we'll visit with some of the folks from the Carroll Stream Police Department. They will tell you how they are training other police departments to recognize when someone is too high to drive. his great mystery. Everybody got a jar with the recipe card. That's the sort of thing Dignity Memorial providers can do. Or something simple and elegant and thoughtful. It's whatever you want, but it's time to plan and think about that. You can visit dignitychicago.com for ideas and an idea guide. Take a minute to learn more about the peace of mind of making your wishes known. DignityChicago.com. Stand by. Okay, we are ready. We are rolling. We are at 208. Well, aren't we playing the open there, Ms. Garris? Oh, wait. Hold on. I was visiting with our guests off the air just as the news was ending. All right, Elephant, 3, 2, 1, hit the open.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
I was.
Here's John Williams.
Impaired. But it wasn't my fault. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3.
Loud hammers.
Weekdays 10 to noon. We're at Swedish Days on Saturday. Hey, Swedish Days, we're going to see you. We'll have a swell time. That'll be from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Elif, where are they having Swedish Days this year? That's in St. Charles, isn't it? Or Geneva? We'll be in Geneva for Swedish Days on Saturday, and we're looking forward to that. Celebrity chefs and other things that are going on out there. And we'll be there from 10 to noon. We hope that you come out and join us. Are we giving away tickets to the Blackhawks convention, too? We're going to do it like we did yesterday, a little before 3 o'clock. We'll give you John Weideman's play-by-play call of a Blackhawks goal. And I know this didn't happen last week, but you're smart enough. You'll be able to guess pretty well who it is that scored the goal. If you get it right, then you win a 4-pack of tickets for your family to go to the Blackhawks convention, July 26th through the 28th at the Hilton downtown. Visit Blackhawks.com to purchase your passes today. So as Illinois gets closer and closer to you and I enjoying recreational marijuana legally, the question becomes, well, how are we going to know when somebody is an impaired driver? I'm not saying you shouldn't drink alcohol, enjoy it responsibly, but then we all know what .08 is, and a lot of us know what that kind of feels like when you're close, when you're over the line. But then what will it be for drivers when it's marijuana? How will the cops make that determination? How will they test you in the field or back at the police station? A couple of officers from the Carroll Stream Police Department are in our studio talking about this today. One is Sergeant Brian Cleaver. Sergeant, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you in our studio.
Thank you.
And sitting next to you is Dan Staffy of the Carroll Stream Police Department. You are the DR expert. What does that stand for?
I am a DRE, drug recognition expert. We actually have 6 of them at the Carroll Stream Police Department.
What does that mean? What do you do?
What a drug recognition expert is, it's an officer that is specifically trained to identify subjects impaired by something other than alcohol, drugs, or combination of drugs, or combination of drugs and or alcohol.
Do police departments all have a DRE?
No, they do not.
A drug recognition expert.
In the state of Illinois, we have approximately 150 DREs right now.
I would think now that you mentioned it, I mean, okay, alcohol, but everything else people are consuming, legally or otherwise these days, you ought to know if they're on that as well, right?
Well, you would like to. The problem is, at the police academy, officers are trained in standard field sobriety tests and basic DUI enforcement. Drug DUI enforcement is quite a bit more intense. We have a couple of programs to help us identify drug-impaired drivers. One is called A-RIDE. It's Advanced Roadside Impaired Driving Enforcement. It's a very intense course. It's a very difficult course. It's a 2-day course that most of us look at officers with about 2 years of experience should probably look into that. I would like to see all road officers trained in A-RIDE. Then we also have the DRE program, or the Drug Recognition Expert Program. The reason why we don't have a lot of drug recognition experts out there is, even though that this program was started back in the 1970s with the Los Angeles Police Department, it was started by 2 officers. One was a narcotics officer. The other was a traffic officer. They were encountering subjects under the influence of what they thought was drugs or alcohol. They'd place them under arrest, whether it was public intoxication, driving a vehicle. They'd bring them back to the police department, and they would blow triple zeros. They had to figure out, what do we do with this? So they came up with the DRE program. They got involved with medical professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, very well-trained officers, other medical professionals.
So somebody that's on cocaine or marijuana or alcohol might behave differently in the field that way?
Absolutely.
What's the difference? I mean, can you point to something that's pretty obvious to you guys? This guy's alcohol, this guy's not alcohol, something I would do when I step out of the car?
All right. Well, first of all, we have to understand what alcohol is, okay? In the DRE program, we use 7 drug categories. Alcohol falls under what's called a central nervous system depressant. Cocaine, on the other hand, would fall under what we call the central nervous system stimulant categories. So there are certain things that we'll look for people under the influence of alcohol or CNS depressants. One of them is called horizontal gaze nystagmus. It's an eye test. We know that there's 3 drug categories or out of our 7 that will produce something called horizontal gaze nystagmus. The drugs we would normally expect to produce HGN, or horizontal gaze nystagmus, are central nervous system depressants, our inhalants, or our dissociative anesthetic drugs. Those are our PCP class drugs, things like ketamine and dextromethorphan and PCP. Cocaine, on the other hand, we don't expect to see horizontal gaze nystagmus, which is that bouncing or jerking of the eyes. When you see an officer on the side of the road.
Follow my finger?
Exactly.
And a person on cocaine will be able to follow the finger?
Well, they'll both be able to follow the finger, but it's the difference, or the stimulus, finger stimulus, it's the difference in the way the eye follows it.
Right.
Somebody under the influence of alcohol, we would expect to, especially being over, if they're over 0.8, see something called lack of smooth pursuit, the eyes bouncing right as they go across, okay? Or distinct and sustained nystagmus at maximum deviation, which is when we bring the eye all the way out, is the eye bouncing, okay? And sustained bouncing, okay? And then something that we call onset of nystagmus prior to 45 degrees. Where does that nystagmus start at? Those are clues we look at for HGN.
But what happens when somebody's on cocaine and you're
okay
doing that?
On cocaine, we don't expect to see HGN. We would, however, expect to see dilated pupils. You'll generally see that with your stimulant categories of drugs.
Where does marijuana fall into all of this?
Marijuana, it's interesting that you bring that up. Marijuana in most medical journals throughout the world is classified as a low-grade hallucinogen. That's because for decades, the amount of delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, was very low, 3-6%. However, in probably the last 8 years, we've seen a boom in the amount of delta-9 THC. But in law enforcement, we gave cannabis or the DRE program.
Excuse me, hold it right there. So you're saying that the marijuana today is stronger than it used to be?
Much stronger.
Like as a percentage, can you calculate it?
The average flower that we're seeing, according to all the studies, the published studies, is 30% of flower or plant, or what people would call bud, okay? The concentrates, the oils, the waxes, the vapes, they've got something called delta-9 THC crystalline shatter that is 99%. Delta-9 THC.
So compared to what somebody took in the 1970s, it's twice as powerful?
It's exponentially more powerful. I would say if you tried to sell somebody the cannabis that you got in the 70s today on the street, you'd probably get your butt kicked for selling that stuff.
So what are you thinking about when you hear all of this?
Well, overseeing our traffic safety program, I've seen that there's been a huge increase in the type of marijuana that we're seeing. We're seeing edibles, we're seeing oils, a lot of people vaping, and it takes away that element of enforcement that we used to have where we could smell the cannabis if someone was smoking while they were driving.
Oh, that's right.
So now we have, you know, the lack of that odor, which officers that aren't trained properly, they're not able to identify that right away.
I hate to say this, but you're taking me back to high school and college. I mean, because my friends knew if you were smoking marijuana, you were probably doing it in your car. Maybe you weren't driving, but if that was a haven for you, but then your parents or a cop would smell it. They'd open up the door and go, wow. But today, it's maybe easier to mask that, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we've seen that time and time again with not only, you know, the nicotine vapes that people have, but the cannabis ones as well. So not having the proper training, which a lot of law enforcement agencies don't have the proper training to go out there and recognize these things, because in Illinois, we're a little bit behind the ball on it.
But doesn't it all start with a traffic stop? And the traffic stop means that you were probably stopped because you were demonstrating some bad driving, right? You're crossing the line, you're going too slow, you're not texting, something's up here, you're either drunk or you're high. So the cop probably notices that first, right?
It really depends on what the officer stopped people for. We can have any type of traffic stop. It could be for a license plate light out that turns into a DUI investigation.
How would that happen? Okay, your light's out. Or you didn't come to a complete stop. I pull you over. You roll down your window. You look in there, and you can already tell just by the guy sitting there if he's intoxicated or on drugs or something?
We like to do as much of a field interview as we can with a person once we make the traffic stop. Just their fine motor skills while we're talking to them, while they're retrieving their license or their insurance. If they're answering our questions appropriately, if they're slow to
respond.
But
you know they're nervous. They're like, don't act drunk, don't act drunk. Because I'm not drunk, because I'm not high, but I'm nervous because you're going to think that, you know, I'm more than just a bad driver right now. So do you appreciate the fact that sometimes we as average citizens are really nervous about an interaction with a police officer in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And officers that are proactive and make numerous traffic stops throughout their shift, they have a vast experience to pull from. So we can, not always, but usually tell if there's nervousness because of you're just pulled over and it's a unusual event in your life to get pulled over, or if you're trying to hide something. And a lot of times we look beyond just the personality of the person or some of those indicators that the person's just nervous. We look at their eyes, their pupils, any odors, anything that they're trying to hide inside that vehicle, their hand movement, things like that.
So then you say, all right, step out of the car. Would that be the next level of inquiry that you would engage the person in then?
Yeah, and a lot of times, even before they get out of the car, we're going to ask them about their activity that evening or that day for whatever it may be. And a lot of times we'll have people be pretty honest with us. Yeah, I've been smoking or I've been drinking. And that goes a long way with us, obviously, because it helps us determine the level of cooperation we're going to get from
but
that
But I've also said, yeah, so we were at a restaurant and I had a drink before and a drink at dinner, but I'm okay to drive. People must tell you that, and that can be the truth, too, right?
Absolutely.
But then we get out of the car, and then maybe we don't follow his finger that well back and forth, right? What are some of the other tests you would do? And is there something you would specifically do to test somebody for marijuana?
Yeah, for myself, it always starts with the meet and greet, personal contact, okay? Or better yet, vehicle in motion. What was the car doing? Did I pull it over for speeding, okay? I pull the vehicle over for speeding. I meet with the subject. I'm looking around. Are they nervous, as you said, because they've been pulled over? And I probably do well over 1,000 stops a year. And it's usually pretty easy to tell the difference of somebody that's nervous because it's
I'll
the police.
It
or somebody that's nervous for something else. But for me, it's in the eyes. I look at the eyes. What are the eyes doing? If it's somebody under the influence of cannabis, now, not always, but I would expect if I meet with them, the eyes are bloodshot, glassy, dilated. That doesn't mean anything by itself, but they're clues to carry an investigation a little further, to dig a little deeper into what's going on.
I would guess somebody doing cocaine is driving fast. They're more a tailgater than they are the guy who's four car lengths back and is maybe a little over the line. I mean, the center line because it's a depressant. They're laid back.
Cocaine's a stimulant.
Right, so the cocaine driver is probably speeding, tailgating, weaving. The guy on marijuana is the opposite of that. This is my guess. You think I'm onto something here?
It depends.
You're saying no, not necessarily. What do you say?
It depends. What strain of cannabis were they smoking? There's multiple different strains.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody that consumes cannabis, the first hour, their pulse may be up, their blood pressure may be up, they may be excitable. It may look similar to a stimulant. It may look similar to a stimulant if they're smoking a certain strain.
Okay, I need to take a break. Let's come back and they'll talk a little bit about going forward in Illinois. You guys are going to be pulling people over, and they will have. And I think this is a service to the listeners, right? I mean, like I said, we've been all drinking alcohol legally for a long time and driving legally for a long time, and some people cross the line. But at least I think our audience has a sense of what that is, what that feels like. They may not know personally what you all will determine is too high to drive, right? I mean, because there's not going to be a thing I can blow into on the side of the road and it's going to say 0.08, right?
We're actually working on something with that right now.
But we don't have that technology in police departments right now. That's not standard practice, is it?
Yeah.
I suppose we need something like that, although people may argue about how you calibrate that and what the level should be. But let's just talk a little bit about that in a minute. These fine folks are from Carroll Stream. Sergeant Brian Cleaver's in our studio, and Officer Dan Staffy, who is a DRE, which stands for Drug Recognition Expert. And Brian is in charge of the traffic safety program over there, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You got a question? You can comment or text to WGN. Here we go. Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best. That's Sundays at 10 on WGN TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best. If you're shopping for homes, don't shop for them without that Home Snap app on your phone. This is really neat. You go to WGNradio.com/homesnap, and you can actually see it in action. We made a video where I walk you through how to get it on your phone and what it does. It's a totally free app. It provides the most up-to-date real estate information on any home you may happen to be driving by. It's all in the name. It gives you the information on a home in a snap. It could be on the market. You see the real estate sign out front. Maybe it's not. You'll get the history of it. You could home snap your own house or your neighbor's and see what the market bears. Download it at gethomesnap.app. And let your house hunting begin. It's free. Wherever you get your apps, get Home Snap on your phone if you're shopping for a house. Talking about in Illinois, marijuana is going to be legal recreationally. And so how much can you have in you or on you? Or how will they know if you're too high to drive? Sergeant Brian Cleaver's in our studio and also Officer Dan Staffy from the Carroll Stream Police Department. But it, so if I'm driving down the road and you pull me over, I just said to you, Dan, off the air, and you should probably answer this on the air. I said, you're going to determine that I was too high to drive based on the way I was driving. I'm crossing the line and whatever. I look like a texter. but then you said maybe you weren't exhibiting those. We just pulled you over for running a stop sign or something like that. And now we suspect that you're high, but we don't have any evidence based on your driving of that. So now how are you going to prove that I'm... And you may... be able to demonstrate, I may even confess, yeah, I smoked some marijuana recently or had an edible, but that doesn't mean I'm too high to drive. How are you going to prove that I should not have been on the road? You don't have a .08, so what are you guys going to do?
Well, we do have the amount that's allowed in someone's system, depending on how we decide to take a chemical test later on at the station.
So then you would arrest me, take me, and then I would do a saliva test or a blood test?
Saliva testing, we don't have the capability of doing it,
so
just
blood.
Yet for blood or urine at okay. this point. But that would be after the arrest was made.
Boy, but now that's a lot, isn't it? Now you got to haul me down, and we got to go through this, and then it's what, like 0.5 nanograms or something like that?
It's 5 nanograms in blood, 10 nanograms in urine or saliva, depending on what would be tested.
And then maybe, and by the way, maybe that person doesn't know if they're what that feels like, right? I wonder if those people go, wow, I didn't know I was too high to quote-unquote drive. I didn't think I was driving that badly, officer.
Well, and that definitely speaks on the bigger issue of why those numbers were made up to begin with. The 5 and 10 nanograms has no scientific basis. It has no scientific backing. It was just taken from states that have legalized marijuana.
They had to pick a number, and they came up with that.
Right, and we've had decades and decades of testing and confirmation that 0.08 is the per se limit for a reason, because people at a 0.08 are impaired. We don't have that same thing for cannabis. Those numbers don't represent the same thing as it does for alcohol.
I'm almost more interested not in that, which sounds somewhat arbitrary, and more on what could you do to prove that I shouldn't be behind the wheel, like the eye thing you were talking about or something like that. Are you guys going to be using that in the field when somebody steps out of the car to test for drugs?
Yes. If we had indications that or clues that you could be possibly impaired, we would request you exit the vehicle and participate in the standard field sobriety test. That would be our HGN test, our walk-in turn test, our one-leg stand test. If the officer is trained in A-RIDE, Advanced Roadside Impaired Driving Enforcement, we'd move on to lack of convergence, which is another test where we check for the eye's ability to cross. That's a depth perception test is what that is.
But a person who's drunk with alcohol probably won't do well on that test, right? Will a person who's high on marijuana fail those tests probably too?
Well, we don't like to use the term fail because these tests have never been pass-fail tests. These tests are all tests that show indications of impairment. So we would expect somebody under the influence of alcohol to show indications of impairment if they're over the legal limit, as well as, according to the state of Illinois, they have come to the determination that standardized field sobriety tests are sufficient to determine whether somebody's impaired by the use of cannabis.
Sounds to me, do you guys think this is true? Like there are going to be some court battles waged over this in the near future. God bless you guys. You're on the front line, but I don't envy you for the task of having to make that determination on behalf of people. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And if you get it wrong, people will be agitated either way, right? Like if you let an impaired driver go back out going, well, I think he was okay, and he wasn't, then, you know, you will be criticized for that. But if you pull people off who could have been driving, and they're not going to like that either. So I don't envy you guys for the task that you're being tasked to do.
It's difficult because we aren't, as law enforcement, supplied with the tools that we need right now in a major capacity
with a
lot of support, proactive and aggressive DUI enforcement. And the chemical testing is a whole other issue on them.
But to the degree that you guys do have these programs, it's Carol Stream that is saying, okay, at least we're vesting in it. You guys have a program, and you are also showing other police departments throughout the area how to do the sort of program that you have, the drug recognition. Is that correct?
Yes, we work together with instructors from across the state and across the country, actually.
Huh.
And we train officers throughout our state and across the country. There are DRE instructors that I work with as well. We train a lot of the departments in A-Ride and DRE.
We're out of time, but it's not just is that person high, but then the determination that you work on is what drug is this person probably on as well. And that's a conversation that I'm glad you're having, but I don't have time for today. Although, you know, I think we ought to do is do another version of this in a month or two. If you guys could come back in, I think this would be really helpful.
Sure.
Sounds like a good idea, right? From Carol Stream. Officers, thank you for coming in. Brian Cleaver and Dan Staffy over at the Carol Stream Police Department. Nice to meet you. Thanks for visiting with us.
Thanks for having us.
It's 2:30. All right, into the newsroom. Stories that matter. Come your way next on WGN. What'd you say the temperatures are again?
It is 65 at O'Hare, 69 at Midway, 66 in Tinley Park is where I went, and 58 along Chicago's lakefront.
58 along the lake. And foggy. And foggy, foggy, foggy.
Yes, all over.
And then if you go further out west, it gets warmer, right? Like 58. Do you have, what's the furthest west? Do you have a bunch of temperatures there?
Yeah, I got Frankfort at 72. Elgin is at 70.
So 58, 72. You know, I play this triangulation game with Steve Bertrand, and I like to reserve the triangulation game for Steve because he enjoys it so much. But it's a 14-degree swing. And I know it's always cooler by the lake, but I mean, it just seems sometimes it's 18 degrees different. And it's just because it doesn't ever get warm by the lake this spring or summer now.
It doesn't seem like it, that's for sure. And the lake is super high. I mean, it's...
That's really weird, too. And again, that's something that doesn't affect most of the people in our listening audience because most of them aren't by the lake. But you should know something's going on out there. The lake has this concrete apron that runs from, the museum campus all the way to Montrose. It's just this lovely thing. And then at an angle from the concrete apron, which is so wide that you have joggers and walkers and bicycle riders and sunbathers, it's this concrete beach that just is the lip of the lake. And then it goes up at an angle all the way to Lakeshore Drive. So imagine Lakeshore Drive with this giant concrete apron. It's underwater a lot of the time now. You know, ankle deep, you could splash along in it, but it's not supposed to be that way.
Now they had to close a little bit of it for a little while.
Yeah, and then that's playing havoc with the currents and the water. So they say don't go swimming. Well, you can't go swimming. The water's freezing because it's cold out there.
I think the only way you could do that is if you had a wetsuit.
Yeah, right. And I've thought about that. I really like the lake. It's where we chose to live. We wanted to be near it. Brenda and I go walking along it all the time, even if we're just looking out into the fog right now. But it's this great national resource in our backyard.
It's hard, even though I've lived here for several years, but it's hard when you're walking along there not to just kind of look up and go, That's just pretty.
I know. Oh, it's really, and I'm disappointed in people, only for them, because I think they would enjoy it, who don't take advantage of it. Now, if you're listening in Naperville, where it's 84 and sunny, I'm sure, you don't have to make the trip all the way in every day. But if part of your summer does not include a few trips down to the lake, and then you got to figure out how to get there. Where are you going to park? Are you going to take public transportation? But I'm telling you, it is time well spent. Bring a little Weber grill or a hibachi and cook some food along the lake path there. Or rent one of the bicycles along the way. They got those things everywhere. But take advantage of that. Just not right now because it's freezing cold and foggy. I just wanted to go back to the president's speech last night just to sort of catch you up. In the 24 hours around the speech, I don't know if this was Tuesday or today, Wednesday, but it says here Trump raises $24.8 million for re-election in less than 24 hours. So in one 24-hour span this week, the president made $25 million. He's got about $40 million in his war chest. He'll have a billion zillion dollars when they start needing money for commercials. He's got a staff of 80 people up and running, just humming, getting his thing going. Meanwhile, you've got about 23 candidates on the other side running. Mary Schmeek, who does not normally go here, she'll write long, funny, or you might not find them funny, poems about Donald Trump that are critical of his speeches and his actions. But she doesn't write the political columns that a Rex Hubke or an Eric Zorn or a John Cass do. Mary lives in another world. But today she wrote a thing about Elizabeth Warren. And she said, I think Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden are going to be the top two. And then she said, I'll go you one better. It's going to be Elizabeth Warren. The buzz is Elizabeth Warren. All right, Mary Schmeek, we'll hold you to that. See if she's right. But the president gave his campaign kickoff last night, and I was a little surprised, and I guess not surprised, how much it just sounded like another one of Donald Trump's 60 rallies, where he says the media's fake, the Democrats want bad things to happen, Mueller was a witch hunt. I guess those are the big three. You know, we played a clip from it a little while ago where he talked about the fake news and how they won't show the size of his crowd. I don't know that that's true. The news doesn't have any obligation to show the size of his crowd, but they don't say regularly that his crowds were smaller, that he didn't fill the arenas. But he always uses that line, and it works. You know, perception is reality. You get the feeling that the media won't give him his due about his crowd size. I don't ever remember them saying he didn't fill the arena and criticizing him for it, but he pointed that out and got the standard reaction. And regardless of whether or not that's true, just what was noteworthy to me is, again, this is his kickoff for another 4 years in a couple of years, and it just sounded very much like standard Donald Trump. Not a lot of new ideas. Maybe he doesn't need any new ideas, but it was an ordinary, angry speech by Donald Trump. Two clips for you. Yeah, you are, Elif. Thanks for asking. This is the president talking about the witch hunt. That always works with his crowd.
We went through the greatest witch hunt in political history. The only collusion was committed by the Democrats, the fake news media and their operatives, and the people who funded the phony dossier, crooked Hillary Clinton and the DNC. It was all an illegal attempt to overturn the results of the election, spy on our campaign, which is what they did, and subvert our democracy. Remember the insurance policy, just in case Hillary Clinton lost. Remember the insurance policy.
Then they go back to it. The lock her up chant. And that works. That works with those people. They love that. It's going to break their hearts when they find out that they're not going to get to not vote for her this election. But lock her up still seems to work at a Trump rally, even as he's running in 2020 for an office that she won't contest. So you've got the media's fake. You've got the Mueller investigation is a witch hunt. You've got Hillary Clinton should be in jail. And then just one other point of his. I guess this is similar to the other one, Elif. Let's just go ahead and play cut two there.
They appointed 18 very angry Democrats to try to take down our incredible movement. After 2 years, 1.4 million pages of documents, 500 search warrants, 500 witnesses, 2,000 800 subpoenas and 40 FBI agents working round the clock. What did they come up with? No collusion. And the facts that led our great attorney general to determine no obstruction.
That's an interesting way to put it. No collusion, and our attorney general concluded no obstruction. Remember, Mueller decidedly didn't say no obstruction, but the way he put it is accurate. The attorney general said no obstruction, even if the Mueller report did not. But it's all a witch hunt, and you almost think that's going to work for Donald Trump again, at least with those people. The New York Times fact-checked his speech last night, and some of it was absolutely true, and some of it was not. Here's an example. And by the way, I don't think that rally speeches or campaign speeches or re-election launches, I don't think everything you say has to be 100% true. It would be nice, but we have no history of that in this country. And sometimes it's hard to tell what's true and what's not. What did you mean? And you and I could get into an argument about whether or not he's doing a better job than Obama on something. So there's room for hyperbole here. So you don't have to get too upset when the president says something that's not 100% factual. But he said, for instance, we are building the wall. We are going to have over 400 miles of wall built by the end of next year. He's getting it done. He told them that at the rally last night. New York Times fact-checked that and said it's an exaggeration. The Customs and Border Protection Agency has received funding for 258 miles of barriers. 175 miles from congressional appropriations, 30 miles from a Treasury Department asset forfeiture fund, and 53 miles from the Pentagon's coffers. So it's 142 miles under what Trump said. It's not 400, it's 258. Even that figure relies on counting replacement projects as new walls, right? So they're replacing old barriers with new fencing. And so is that Trump's new wall or is that not? Is it a wall or not? He said 400, it's 258, and some of it was there already. Now, you talk amongst yourselves and decide if that's him telling the truth or not. He said we have lifted more than 6 million Americans off of food stamps, and the New York Times says that's true. He said the unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in over 51 years. The New York Times says that's true. You know, you can get into an argument about, well, it was going down anyway, but it's true. So the Times has fact-checked the speech that didn't sound that different. And Mary Schmeek says today that if you had to pick one, she'd put her money on Elizabeth Warren. I just thought Elizabeth Warren got too testy too fast. That she got into these, you know, she took the bait when he started to name-call her. And I don't want anybody to be doing that, let alone the Democrats. And it's maybe tough to avoid, but when they do, I think now you're just in the mud and I don't want my candidates to be in there. One last note here about our guests who were on just a moment ago. We visited with a couple of officers from the Carroll Stream Police Department about marijuana and how they'll test you for being too high to drive. Lots of texts include these. John, cops will never be able to tell if you are high. I don't get pie eyes anymore because I'm old and I've smoked forever. I won't show. Hey, John, that's why you never answer their questions when the cops pull you over. You might tip yourself. Somebody said, hey, John, you need to watch Live PD. You guys watch that TV show? Every now and then I'm clicking around and I see something that looks like that. I don't watch that too much. John, please, a lawyer is going to have a field day with this. I quite agree. Maybe Colorado and California figured it out, but I think it'll take a while before people driving around having smoked marijuana, before they and the courts and the legislature and the police will all come up with a determination about what's too high to drive. I don't know the answer to that. It's 2:51. We haven't given away those Blackhawks tickets yet, have we? Looking at the screen, CNN says that the authorities in the Dominican Republic are looking at the mini bars of those people who have died because of who knows why. And that was one of the things we were wondering about in our house. Like, all of these random tourists, what could they have in common? Is it something in the air, in the water? What? Who knows? They're looking at the minibars to see if there was something in there that was poisoning or somehow killing these people. It's a crazy story. Speaking of bars, the Los Angeles Times has ranked, in fact, they have something called the LA Times Candy Bar Power Rankings based on the taste of candy bars and their wrappers. I guess the wrapper has something to do with how you appreciate a candy bar. Number 30 is the Hershey's Milk Chocolate Bar. Wow, that would be in my top three. Number 29 is the Three Musketeer. Number 27 is Mr. Good Bar. Number 22 is a Mars Bar. Number 17 is the Mounds. Number 19 is the Nestle's Crunch. Number 15, Hershey's Special Dark Chocolate. 14, the Almond Joy. 12, Kit Kat.
Yum.
I know. That's going to disappoint a lot of people. Kit Kat at 12. O. Henry is at 10. Baby Ruth at 7. Twix at 6. Twix at 6.
What I believe that. It's gold.
Twix is gold?
The outside of it is gold. The wrapper is gold.
Yeah, I thought you were saying, and the crispy, crunchy chocolatiness is golden.
It's golden.
Yeah. Number 4 is the Snickers bar. Number 3 is the Payday. Number 2 is the Butterfinger.
Ew, I hate Butterfinger.
It does not even get in my top 30 either, Elif. The LA Times Candy Bar Power Rankings based on taste and attractiveness of the wrapper. The number 1, they say it's not even close. Take 5.
What?
That's a candy bar. Have you had a Take 5 before?
Those are actually really good.
I've never had one of those.
It's got a nice mix of peanut butter, caramel, pretzels, chocolate, pretty much everything that you'll find in some form of a candy bar,
that's
but altogether.
That's what they said. That's okay, what they, yeah. It's everything you need is right there in the Take 5. Eric, you're on WGN Radio. You are the 12th caller or texter. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you for letting me get in on this.
Amen, brother. We'll do it again tomorrow. Have you been to the Blackhawks convention before?
Never.
Oh, man, this is cuckoo bananas fun. Everybody go to Blackhawks.com to get your passes, but Eric's got a family pack of 4. You talk to Elif off the phone. We'll see you out there, okay?
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for listening.